3 years ago, at the 2021 ASCO Congress, the first positive disease-free survival results of the KEYNOTE-564 trial were announced. And 3 years later, at this year's ASCO GU Congress, the overall survival data have been presented, and more long-term data provided additional information about pembrolizumab use, safety, and efficacy in this setting. I would like to welcome Professor David McDermott from Harvard Medical School in Boston, United States, an investigator of this breakthrough study. Thank you very much for sharing your insight with our audience.
Great to be with you, Edgar, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about the study.
What population was involved in this study, and how were high-risk patients determined?
So the KEYNOTE-564 study was a study that looked at adjuvant pembrolizumab versus placebo in patients with clear cell kidney cancer who were at increased risk of disease recurrence after surgery. There were different groups enrolled in the study, as you talk about, as your question sort of alludes to. There were patients who were considered at intermediate or high risk of recurrence, those patients without metastatic disease who either had T2 tumors that had features like high grade, grade 4, or sarcomatoid features without any lymph node involvement, or they were T3 tumors of any grade with no lymph node involvement. They then could also be in the high-risk category, which were patients with T4 tumors of any grade, no lymph node involvement, or any sized primary tumor of any grade that had lymph node involvement. And then there was a third group of patients who had undergone a nephrectomy and then had a complete resection of a solitary metastatic site, the so-called M1-NED group. So those were the three subgroups of patients who were enrolled in the study. All patients had to be performance status 0 or 1.
And what was the primary endpoint of the study, and what did you learn 3 years ago?
Right. So the primary endpoint was typical for an adjuvant study. It was disease-free survival as interpreted by investigators. The key secondary endpoints included things like overall survival, which was presented, as you alluded to, at the GU ASCO meeting last month in San Francisco. And obviously, safety was also focused on as a secondary endpoint.
So what did we learn 3 years ago? What were the first DFS data at the first interim analysis?
Well, the first study, first release of the data, the primary endpoint of disease-free survival was met at the first interim analysis for the study, showing a clear separation in the curves, favoring the adjuvant pembrolizumab over placebo. At that time, the hazard ratio was 0.68 with a p-value, I believe, of 0.001. And, you know, that showed a benefit that was real, you know, clinically significant, almost a, you know, over a 30% reduction in risk of recurrence in the patients receiving pembrolizumab. At the time the data was presented, there was also a separation in the survival curves that didn't meet statistical significance. It was early, there weren't that many events, but the data on overall survival was presented there. And we then waited to see if that trend towards improvement in survival would be established with more follow-up. And that was, as we learned last month.
And if we continued first with the DFS data, what were the new DFS data and safety presented at this ASCO GU Congress?
Well, the disease-free survival data was updated for the intent-to-treat population. The hazard ratio was quite stable. In separation from the curves was also stable. The hazard ratio was 0.72. With you know, significantly more events occurring on the placebo arm. At 48 months, if you want to look at absolute difference between the curves, there was about an 8% difference in disease-free survival favoring pembrolizumab, essentially 65% of patients disease-free versus about 57% of patients at 48 months.
When the overall survival data were presented, the audience in the Congress hall erupted in applause. What were these overall results, and why are they so clinically significant?
Well, I think they're important for two reasons. So just before I get to that, let's talk about the numbers. So there were more events in the placebo group versus pembrolizumab. The hazard ratio for overall survival was 0.62, which is almost a 40% reduction in risk of death, favoring the pembrolizumab arm. The absolute improvement in overall survival at 4 years was 5%, 91 versus 86%, which is important to take into consideration, meaning essentially both groups are doing well survival-wise thus far, but there is a benefit for those receiving pembrolizumab. And I think to get to your larger question, this is important for a couple of reasons. One, this trial was the first trial in kidney cancer to show a survival advantage for any treatment in the history of adjuvant trials for kidney cancer. This is something that Dr. Choueiri, who was the lead author on the study, emphasized. I mean, how many patients have gone on these studies over many decades, literally thousands of patients, not seeing this kind of benefit for overall survival. But I think this is the first time we've seen a clear survival advantage for any PD-1 agent in the adjuvant setting. And as we all know, PD-1 agents are widely used across multiple solid tumor types. And this is the first one, to our knowledge, that showed both a DFS benefit, which we've seen before, for example, in melanoma, but we haven't been able to show a clear overall survival advantage. And that exists here in this study. So, the questions come up, and we can discuss that about why we might see that here versus other studies. But needless to say, that's an important milestone for the field because ultimately, overall survival is the true benefit that we're looking for our patients. And obviously, our patients are looking for, they not just want to delay recurrence, ideally, they'd prevent it so they can live free of cancer and the treatment of cancer.
What did we see in subgroup analysis?
Well, once again, for overall survival, they did a forest plot. We presented a forest plot looking at the hazard ratios across a number of different, pretreatment criteria. Essentially, the benefit was pretty consistent across all of the criteria, looking at things like age and race and performance status, PD-L1 status, the region, whether they were enrolled in the US or outside the US, where most patients were enrolled, their M stage, as we talked about before, risk categories, as we talked about before, sarcomatoid features. For all of those, there was benefit. Obviously, their hazard ratios are wide for some of these categories because there are huge numbers. The only place where there wasn't an obvious benefit, in my opinion, was for female patients, of which there were almost 300 enrolled. There, the hazard ratio for overall survival is slightly above one at 1.08. And I think that's something we need to look into as a field. Why does some of this benefit seem to accrue more to men than women? Obviously, there's not a ton of patients here, but we need to look at that going forward. But from all those other categories that I mentioned, pembrolizumab was helping all of those patients in a pretty consistent manner that was similar across those risk categories.
Were there any new safety signals?
Right. So I think that's an issue that we should talk about more, in my opinion, at these meetings. Essentially, there was an update, a detailed update on the safety signals. Most of that focuses on the early incidence of adverse events, all-cause adverse events, those that are treatment-related, those that are considered immune-mediated. All of that data is presented. Obviously, there are more of these events in patients receiving pembrolizumab than placebo, but most of those side effects were manageable, and there were not obvious treatment-related deaths on this study. So there were not new events that we haven't seen before in this data set, which is good. But I think in future presentations, hopefully, we'll get a better sense of not just the severity of side effects and the relationship to treatment and the incidence, which we focus on a lot, but also the duration and the resolution of side effects, because I think that's an important concept to talk about. Now that our patients are living so much longer, which is great, and now that these drugs are going to be applied in a much broader fashion to patients who may already be cured just by the surgery, I think we need to talk about the long-term impact of side effects. And while many of these side effects are manageable, some don't go away, and some become lifelong, and some become life-altering. It's not easy to measure the duration of individual side effects. Some of these side effects are rather rare, happening in 1% or less of patients, but sometimes they don't go away, and patients need to understand that there is a trade-off that they might be living with side effects, in my opinion, for the rest of their life, for example, like hypothyroidism or insulin-dependent diabetes, which admittedly don't happen that often. But when you add up the rare side effects, you know, there might be 5 or 10% of patients who are going to live with those side effects for the rest of their lives. And they need to know that, in my opinion, before they start the treatment.
How can these new results influence the adjuvant CLEAR-Cell kidney cancer treatment recommendations in the future, in the guidelines?
Yeah, I think they help in two ways. To that point, Edgar, I think it's an important question. You know, being able to say you have an overall survival advantage allows you to clarify your discussions with patients. Being able to say you're going to reduce the chances of dying of kidney cancer, you know, by a certain percentage, which is real, is an easier, in my opinion, discussion to have with patients than to talk about disease-free survival, which is a little bit harder to explain. Although both are important to patients, overall survival is a clear discussion point, which patients understand. It also, I think, helps us clarify some of our discussions in the field. Like, there are issues with this trial that we need to talk about more, and I'm glad to talk about some. I already sort of alluded to the long-term toxicity issues that need to be focused on, in my opinion, in future discussions. But clearly, this is a very clean result, for pembrolizumab in this setting, which helps distinguish it, in my view, from some of the other studies that have been done recently in this setting with other checkpoint inhibitors that have produced disappointing or negative results. So I don't think, while we can talk about why those trials were negative and how they were designed differently and all the rest, I think to a certain extent, you know, pembro clearly differentiates itself from those others. We don't need to talk about this trial so much as an outlier compared to those, but more as one that's sort of stands on its own, going forward. Now, there were very good questions raised during the discussion that need also to be addressed, that we need more data on. One of them has to do with how the study was conducted and how patients, whether or not they got PD-1 antibody on the, if they were on the placebo arm when they recurred or not. I think we need much more information on that group of patients. And that question was addressed by all three questioners, to the lead investigators. So in the future, hopefully get more data on that. When you look at the slide about subsequent therapies, there are about 210 patients on the placebo group who recurred. And 80% of them got some subsequent therapy, which is, pretty good. But only less than 50% of them got subsequent PD-1 therapy, which I don't think meets the standard of what we would expect, particularly in the US where PD-1 is widely available, for salvage PD-1 therapy. And this becomes an important question. How many of the survival events occurred in patients who didn't get PD-1? We should try to learn that number. How much of that lack of getting PD-1 contributed to the survival advantage that we see in this study? We should try to address that question. Why didn't patients get PD-1? These were all questions that were raised by folks who came to the microphone at GU ASCO, and hopefully we can get that information as well.
As an investigator of this study, what are your personal experiences with pembrolizumab use for adjuvant treatment of RCC?
So, we've been using immune checkpoints in the adjuvant setting for a while now, both in trials and in its standard of care. I treat both kidney cancer and melanoma. So the melanoma experience has taught us a lot about the pluses and minuses of this approach. In melanoma, both nivolumab and pembrolizumab are approved. We have clear disease-free survival benefit, but we don't have overall survival benefit. So we use not yet on the studies that have been done. So we don't use immune checkpoint blockade as broadly as it is approved in patients. So for example, in stage 3A patients, PD-1 is approved, but we speak cautiously to patients about its application because the absolute improvement in outcome is relatively small. There's no, because they're at low risk of recurrence, and there is a real risk at, you know, lifelong or life-threatening side effects. For anyone who's used an immune checkpoint inhibitor in the adjuvant setting who's had a bad outcome, I mean, that always sort of leaves a mark on us. We obviously don't want to hurt our patients, particularly if they've already been cured of their cancer by the surgery. So that's made some of us a little more cautious. And I think, you know, that is an issue with kidney cancer patients as well. You know, we obviously in both fields need to try to improve our selection markers. You know, how do we decide who needs treatment or not? You know, how do we decide who is at high risk of, truly at high risk of recurrence and not? You know, can we predict which patients are at high risk for long-term toxicity? There's some interesting data from Sasha Guseb's group that Tony Schwery and others have been involved with, you know, looking at predictors of long-term toxicity with immune checkpoint blockade implicating, you know, SNPs in, for example, the IL-7 gene, for example, that in my mind, that work needs to be encouraged because obviously life-threatening toxicity adds up. So, you know, better predictors of relapse, better predictors of response, better predictors of side effects all need to be done, not just for melanoma and kidney cancer patients, but for all the patients who are going to be exposed to these agents, either before surgery or after surgery. Because the bottom line is many of these patients don't need it. And some patients are going to have long-term problems because they received it. So hopefully this will be an area of, you know, ongoing research.
We have seen data from other clinical trials in this setting in Congress. And in conclusion, looking at all the available data and putting them into perspective, how do you see the adjuvant clear cell kidney cancer treatment and the role of pembrolizumab? Because you mentioned that OS is so important, especially if you look at the potential toxicity versus benefit.
Yeah, I think, you know, prior to this overall survival result, you know, I think you could have a debate about why this trial showed disease-free survival and the others didn't. You know, was it a difference in the effectiveness of the drugs or the design of the trial, the execution of the trial, those sort of things? I think this result, you know, clearly separates the pembrolizumab result from the others and essentially leaves us, in my opinion, with, you know, we don't necessarily have to debate whether or not pembrolizumab should be discussed with patients who are at high or intermediate risk of recurrence. I think it needs to be discussed with patients. And the others, you know, they don't have a clear path forward. I think the bigger question is when you talk to patients, you know, how do you balance your discussion with the pluses and minuses? And what additional information, as I sort of alluded to, do we need as clinicians to help us educate our patients about both the long-term benefits, you know, and the potential risks? So we need more data on who is truly benefiting from this approach. You know, was there an impact on lack of crossover on the result? You know, what about the long-term side effects? You know, there's still much more research that needs to be done. There's still a balanced discussion that needs to happen. But essentially, patients who are at intermediate and high risk for recurrence need to know, in my opinion, about these findings, and so that they can make their own decision for how to move forward with their own care. So I think it's an important trial. It needs to be discussed, and we need to do more research in this space.
Congratulations to the great results, and thank you very much for the conversation.
Good to talk to you too, Edgar. Have a great day.